Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of NHL Wraparound. Vic Morin, along with Neil Smith. Terrific show on tap today. We're going to start off with our one-timers, looking at a couple of categories for some potential award winners at the end of the season. Then we'll be joined by longtime Washington Capitals TV analyst Craig Lachlan. We're going to also talk about John Hines going to the well again and rolling snake eyes. And we'll also have a human side of the story you're not going to want to miss. But first, a word from our friends at Migray.
From Howe to Hughes, from Béliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to MyGray.com, MEIGRAY.com, to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from MyGray.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Neil, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind today is coaches, and how many coaches this season are qualified to win the Jack Adams Award at the end of the season. I don't think I've ever seen a year where you have so many coaches that have done such a good job with their clubs that it's going to be really hard to pick only three of them. And let me give you the examples of it. I think the front runner from everybody is Rick Tocchet in Vancouver. He's been good from the first game all the way through the season. He's been excellent in out west. But you've also got John Tortorella, who's done an amazing job with Philadelphia Flyers. Nobody thought that they would be there. You've also got our Washington Capitals coach, Spencer Carberry, who has done a phenomenal job somehow, and we hear how from Craig Lachlan, somehow keeping the Washington Capitals in the race and in the playoffs. You've also got Andrew Burnett, who's done a fabulous job with Nashville. Second time in his career, he's done a fabulous job. Don't forget, he guided Florida to a President's Trophy a couple of years back. And then the guy that I think it deserves a lot of consideration is Knobloch with the Edmonton Oilers, because he has taken an airplane that was spiraling out of control and put it back on course. So you've got a lot of great candidates. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Now, my one-timer has to do with the potential MVPs around the NHL, and I'm going to go in alphabetical order so I'm not tipping my hand on who I think should win. First is Nikita Kucherov in Tampa. He's been in on almost 50% of the total goals that the Lightning have scored this season. Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado, he's going to battle with Kucherov and Connor McDavid for the scoring title, and when you push the speed increase on your computer, that's pretty much the speed that he plays with all the time. Maybe the most dynamic player in the entire NHL. There's Austin Matthews, became the ninth player in NHL history last weekend to record multiple 60-goal seasons. And then there's Connor McDavid, who's on the cusp of joining Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and Mario Lemieux as the only players in league history to record a 100-assist season. And then Artturi Panarin of the New York Rangers having a career year for the odds-on favorite right now to win the President's Trophy. So five great players, but the guy I'm looking at, and the way I look at it, is if you took these players out of their respective lineups, there would be enormous holes. But I think the player that would be missed the most would be Kucherov in Tampa. And the writers, they may not like his antics at the All-Star game that happened this past February. And maybe a lot of reporters didn't like the shade that he threw at the Canadians after they won the Stanley Cup in 2021. But for my money, this is the one guy that absolutely is irreplaceable on his team this season. This one-timer segment has been brought to you by the Ninsel Wealth Partners. Our goal is to be your primary source of financial advice. Our mission is to provide quality strategies customized to your needs. We recognize that you place your trust in our ability to help you achieve your goals. To us, there's no greater honor, and without question, there's no greater responsibility.
Well, now it's a real fun privilege to be our guest today, Craig Lochlin of the Washington Capitals Television. He's been doing this since 1990. Can you believe this? He's been doing it 34 years. He's been the analyst, one of the best known analysts in the National Hockey League. I've known him for a long time. He played at Clarkson University. It might have been called Clarkson College then, was it?
Craig, Clarkson College. Yep, exactly, Neil. Clarkson College, Golden Knights.
Yeah, and you played there with the famous Dave Taylor, who, of course, had quite a career in the National Hockey League with the LA Kings. You've been around such a long time and done such a great job. And you and Joe Beninati have been together since 96. So that in and of itself is 28 years of that marriage.
It's amazing, isn't it? The longevity. I mean, to me, we work so well because we are like the odd couple. Okay, he likes his wine. I like my beer. I like to wear jeans and a t-shirt. He likes to dress up in his snazzy suit. So it's worked for a long time for us.
Now, you guys are terrific on the air together. And I whenever there's a Washington game that I'm going to watch, I always tune into your broadcast rather than the opponent, just so I can hear your voice. But let me ask you this. You've been there so long with Washington. There's a million different questions I could ask you. But you've actually been there for 12 different coaches. I counted them up. Which one was the funniest? Which one was the most entertaining? Or which one was your favorite of all the 12 coaches?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I'd have to say Gabby, Bruce Boudreau. You know, he was a fun-loving guy and always has been. And he was very... you would talk to him and he would come back in the plane and he'd talk to me and he'd talk to Joe. And he was just a fun loving type of coach, but very focused on the game at hand. And we always had fun with him because we often went out to lunch with him. And his big thing was having a burger before every game and then going back to his room. And I'm sorry, I have to say this to you, but he would have a bath. And we used to say, Gabby, just stick with the burger. We don't want to hear about the bats to get ready for the game. But no, he was one of the guys that I really enjoyed. I also loved Ron Wilson. There hasn't been a bad guy come through here. Some are more, you know, more excited and more outgoing than others. But overall, we've had a good run of coaches here in Washington, and I've been fortunate to be a part of it. And my favorite coach going back to playing would have to be Brian Murray back in the day. Bless his heart. Brian Murray was one of my favorite coaches to ever play for when I played in the National Hockey League.
Well, I do want to mention, too, another couple of accolades for you, Craig, is that you were involved in that big, big trade in 1982 where you got traded to the Caps from the Montreal Canadiens, along with another great color guy nowadays, Brian Engblom. We've had him on our show, Doug Jarvis. And, of course, a steal for the Caps was getting Rod Langway away from the Montreal Canadiens.
Neil, as I've always told you, it was me and three throw-ins, and they pulled the deal on it. I always say that to anybody that asks me, how was the trade? I said, well, it was me and these three other guys. I didn't know who they were, but I think that was a big trade at the time. And when we were on the plane, it was funny. I got traded the day of training camp, and we were walking along in front of the forum, and Rod Langway came out the door, and he said, Locker, you got to go upstairs and see Mr. Irving Grundman and Bob Berry at the time and all the brass up there. And I said, well, what's going on? We hadn't even stepped on the ice. And he said, we've all been traded to Washington. The funny part about that story was we were in Washington the previous season, the last game of the year. And I remember walking up the old ramp at Capital One. And number two, the fans were on the ice and we were like, oh my God, the fans are on the ice. That would never happen in Montreal back in the day. And they're getting the jerseys off their back and all this stuff's going on with the Washington Capitals. We get traded. The day we get traded, we come to Washington, we fly in, we're having training camp in Hershey. And the front page of the newspaper said, it's the Save the Caps campaign. And we were caught off guard there because they were trying to keep the team in Washington, and there was a big push for all those things going on. So we went from one of the most storied franchises with no problems to one in Washington where it was, we've got to save the Caps. We can't let them leave. And we were a big part of that, I think, at the time, because we made the playoffs for the first time ever in Caps history.
Well, the other accolade I want to mention, because I think this is fabulous for you, you got your number 22 retired by Clarkson University. And that's quite an honor, Craig. I know you might not think so, but being a former college player myself, I think that's a fabulous honor that you have there.
Well, it was exciting. You know, they played a huge part of it. Remember, back in the day, and I think I might have told you this story, I went through playing in Toronto in the MTHL at the time and played for the Toronto Junior Red Wings, the Toronto Toros, if you can believe it. That was when the WHA team was in town. I played for the Toros. Then I got cut at my midget year, and I was like, what the heck's happening here? I got cut off the team I had previously played for. So I ended up playing football, and I absolutely loved playing football for Jarvis Collegiate. And I was excited to be part of that. And I played football and I played juvenile. And you remember it, guys, back in the day, that was sort of a dead end after midget, like it was a men's league sort of. So I played juvenile to get the love of the game back. And someone from the Wexford Raiders junior A team saw me and said, we think you could make our team. And I was like, I was sort of like wishy-washy because I had been cut from my midget team. And I said, okay, I'll come to tryouts. Ended up going to tryouts. We had a great team for the Wexford Raiders. And I was recruited by two or three college teams. One was Lake State and one was Clarkson. And my parents had never been to the United States in their life. They were both farmers from up northern Ontario in Killaloe and Wabasheen, and they didn't know anything about it. So the reason I chose Clarkson actually was not only they had, you know, Jerry York as the coach, and I had known about him and heard about him in college lore about being this up and coming great coach, which he ends up being the winningest coach all time in NCAA hockey. And Billy O'Flaherty, whose brother, Jerry, was scouting the Montreal Canadiens at the time. And the reason I picked Clarkson more than anything was the fact that I could have my family, my mom and dad, come 4 hours down 401 towards Ogdensburg, cross the bridge and be able to see me play. And that was something I looked forward to. None of our family had ever really been to the United States. So this opened the eyes of my parents. They came down a lot of weekends. And it was one of the greatest times of my life. And I was drafted my freshman year. And a funny story about that is that the guy walks in. He says, where is the press box? And you guys know a Walker Arena, this small little barn in Potsdam, New York, right? With the crazy bell at the end. My girlfriend at the time was an usher. He says, well, hello, sir. And he's wearing a derby, dressed to the nines. And he says, well, I'm here to watch this number, I don't know, this number 22 or 26, this Lachlan kid. And she says, well, let me introduce you. I'm Craig's girlfriend. I end up marrying her. We've been together ever since that freshman day. And we've been together over 50 years. And the man that was introducing my wife to was none other than Ronnie Caron back in the day. And they end up drafting me. And we were sitting at the kitchen table. My dad was smoking a player's cigarette like they used to back in the day. And he said, Craig, you've been drafted. And I'm thinking, drafted to the Army, drafted to wherever. And there was a small little thing, 4x4 in the back of the Toronto Star, that my dad would go over the sports section every day in the kitchen on the old laminate table that sat there right next in downtown Toronto. And he said, Craig, you were drafted. And I said, wow. And that's all we knew about. And then I got a letter, Neil, and you'll love this. The letter was from the Montreal Canadiens. Craig, we're so happy we drafted you. And we want to tell you to stay in college all 4 years. And we will check you out your senior year. So that was my introduction to pro hockey.
Oh, that's great. Well, what a career. I got to move on with you to talk to you about your Caps, because as you and I spoke on the phone when we were arranging to do this, It's mind-boggling. I mean, they have the analytics be damned, right? I mean, all the analytics are upside down on this team. I think I text you. I know that Washington's a minus 31. The highest minus I could find that's made the playoffs since the year 2000 was Detroit. 1 year made it at a minus 23. And I mean, they're second to last in goals in the entire Eastern Conference. So I got to have you explain to Vic and me and all the listeners, what is the magic that they've got that they've been able to do this?
I'll tell you, the biggest point here, and I think people overlook it sometimes, is the Caps have lost huge this year. If you look at the amount of games, there's 22 or 23 games, guys, that they've been blowing out by 3, 4, and 5 goals. And to me, that balloons the goals against. And the games that they've won have been of the 1 or 2 goal variety. So there you see a little bit of a discrepancy. When the Caps lose, they lose big time. When the Caps win, they win by 1 goal or they get a great save or a power play goal. And that's been the difference, to be honest with you. So don't read too much into that. Although it's a statistic that I even look at, goals for, goals against. We're playing, Buffalo on Tuesday. And when you look at that, they've got a tighter amount, goals for, goals against, goal differential, but look where they are in the standings. So yeah, analytics be damned, but I think it's the fact that we've lost big a lot of games this season.
But Craig, there are other components to this also, is that the team has dealt with a lot of injuries this year. No Nick Backstrom all year. TJ Oshie has only played in 47 games. Alex Ovechkin had been inconsistent for the better part of the season. Tom Wilson will be serving the last of his 6-game suspension tomorrow night in Buffalo. So you got to look to the guy behind the bench that has really been able to pull this all together.
Yeah, Vic, you make a really good point. You know, we came into the season and I was so excited because Nick Backstrom was coming back from that hip resurfacing. I thought he looked great in training camp. So I'm going over the roster. And we all know now, defensemen are great, but a lot of teams and a lot of analysts say, hey, that team's really tough because they're so good up the middle in this day and age in the NHL. The speed, the ability to create offense is up the middle. So I looked at it and we had Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Strome, and Dowd. And I was thinking to start the year, that's not bad. If those four guys are healthy, they can lead the charges. We'll be in good shape in the Metropolitan Division. Then Backstrom doesn't last long. His hip flares up, can't play. Kuznetsov has his issues. He gets dealt. So now we're left with Strome as a number one guy. The fourth guy is Nick Dowd, is very solid, but we have to fill in up the middle. So now McMichael comes in, Lapierre comes in, and it's been an amazing coaching job because day one of training camp, Carberry said, we want to play with pace and speed. And I'm looking around. We weren't really built that way, guys. We were built to be a methodical, heavy, hard team. And now he's changing it into a fast pace, play with pace, play with speed. And the way they were going to accomplish that is less handles from the D to get it up quicker into the forwards' hands to make our image look faster. And it took some time for the coaching staff to break some of the habits we had under Laviolette, we had during our cup run with Barry Trotz, we had with all the coaches we had in between. So now this veteran bunch is learning on the fly, and you guys know that everything takes time, whether it be the power play to get out of the habits that they had, to 5-on-5 habits. And now you infuse youth, and now the Caps are playing like Carberry wanted. For what he's done and what we've had to get through, he definitely needs consideration for Coach of the Year. But I think you have other guys around the league, like the Rick Tocchet, who's totally changed around that team from where they were, that probably deserve more credit. But Carberry and his staff, guys, they've done an incredible job with a group of veterans and now teaching young kids how to play the game at the NHL level.
You've got another position too, Locker, that's amazing. I mean, you go, the Washington Capitals sign the Stanley Cup winning goaltender, Darcy Kemper, 2 years ago. He comes into the team. This year, he gets outplayed by Charlie Lindgren. And Charlie Lindgren becomes the number one goalie. And basically, I know you've heard of him because you're with the Caps, but unheard of around the league, really. I mean, not a big name. But he saved you guys in goal because Darcy wasn't playing up to that Stanley Cup look for the Caps the way he did for Colorado.
It's been incredible. You know, you looked at the tandem that we had, and we're thinking Darcy's going to play 60 games. Charlie's going to probably play 22 games, and that Darcy would carry the load. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this guy that walks in, Lindgren, who's only played 100 games in the NHL to date, or 101, and now he's really been so solid that he not only makes the saves that he's supposed to, he's coming up with a save a game at least above expected. He's a scrambly sort. He's very athletic. He's very quick post to post. He catches in the opposite hand, which probably drives shooters crazy because there's only like 5 or 6 of those guys in the NHL. And now he's really honed his game. He's worked hard with the coaching staff, the goalie coaches, everything that goes into it. And it's incredible. He's in the month of March, he had the most wins in the National Hockey League among all goaltenders. And against Buffalo, will make his 10th straight appearance. We're not going to see Darcy Kuemper probably till the end of the week when we have back-to-backs with Pittsburgh and Carolina. And it may also come down to, you know, if we need those games, and we need games now, we need wins. So that's going to be interesting to see at the end of the week, which game Darcy gets, which game Charlie gets. But right now it's Charlie's net.
Craig, we're going to get into the schedule on the other side of our break. So stay with us. But first, a word from Dewar. I've been wearing Dewar jeans now out to dinner, to appointments, traveling, you name it. They are a go-to in my wardrobe. Why? Because Dewar's stretch performance denim and lifestyle apparel is designed for all-day comfort and durability. Dewar's denim is antibacterial, meaning less washing. They wash well, and they wear even better. Why? Because Dewar jeans are made of temperature-regulating fabrics for moisture management. The performance denim fabric has Cool Max technology, keeping me cool and dry in any weather. We absolutely love our Dewar jeans, and we know that you will too. Check out Dewar's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or shop online at shopdewar.com/NHLFan. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off site-wide only at our exclusive URL. Shop DEWER.com/NHLFan. Don't wait to get 20% off. Go now to shopdoor.com/NHLFan. And welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Our guest has been the longtime TV analyst of the Washington Capitals, Craig Lachlan. Craig, before we went to break, we were just talking about how the goaltenders might rotate throughout the rest of the regular season. The team has 9 games left on their schedule, and they look pretty solid in terms of making the playoffs. But where do you think this is going to end up? They play at Buffalo Tuesday night, home to Pittsburgh, at Carolina, home Ottawa, at Detroit, at Buffalo again, home Tampa and Boston, and they finish at Philadelphia. So they've had some help with clubs coming back to the pack, but they've also played well enough to get themselves into third in the Metro starting this week. How do you see this ending for this Capitals team?
Well, with the schedule you just went over, Vic, I'm thinking they need 5 wins in this bunch here, because it would be 5 wins against teams they're trying to catch, like the Flyers. They're going to have some tough back-to-backs coming up. They've got 2 left, including this week with Carolina, obviously, on one night. And that's tough coming from home against Pittsburgh, which is always, it doesn't matter where the Penguins are, it's a very, very tough game, because both these teams have a tremendous amount of respect for one another. And it's a great rivalry in the National Hockey League, and it will remain a great rivalry. So to me, that's a tough test coming up. But I think if they win 5, I think they're going to be in good shape. And I think what they've got to look for now more than anything, I think they want to get that Metropolitan third spot. I really do. And I think they're hungry for it. I think the Flyers seem to be ebbing up and down. And I think the Capitals have had an even keel, and they've been very good being in games. Like, case in point, the Boston Bruins game the other night, they could have won it. They would have been better served to get 2 points, but they still got a point going to overtime. I still think Boston's a very good team. Swayman's excellent between the pipes. So I'm excited about it. I think they win five. We're going to get third in Metro.
I hope they don't sit back and rue the fact that they had a 4 minute 4-on-3 power play in that overtime against Boston. So, that one was a little bit tough to swallow, but certainly I think, you know, from your time as a player also, that you've had a team that perhaps there wasn't a lot of great expectation. They had a struggle from behind all season long. But now once you get to this part of the season, how much adrenaline really carries you through to the end of the regular season and to end on a high note?
Well, when you're playing for a playoff spot, a lot. I think some teams that are already in are sort of like, you know, even playing Boston, all they wanted to do, they were talking about fine-tuning their game for the playoffs. Capitals aren't in that mode. They are in life and death every night. What's impressed me, fellas, is more about, you know, we know what the veterans give. We know what TJ can do. Ovi, Stromer's had a great year. You look at those type of guys. John Carlson celebrating his 1,000th game the other night is quite the accolade. So you look at those guys and you know what you're going to get. They love playing at this time of the year, especially Ovi. But what's impressed me is some of the young guys. We've used a lot of guys from Hershey this year. I think the experience of winning in the American Hockey League last year, doing so well this year. Now we have guys, and I'm not sure they know what they're getting into, and they're just playing and they're competing. You have guys like Lapierre, Connor McMichael, playing every situation for Carberry. A lot of trust there. Alexiev, who didn't play for the first half of the season, now he's helping out the D that some of them get nicked up, some get tired. The other night it was, you know, you have a guy come out like a Sandin. Now Alexiev has to take more responsibility. So I've been impressed with the youngsters playing at this time of year. To me, it's a good sign for the Capitals moving forward, and it's a great experience for them to feel the heat, to feel the pressure of trying to get into the playoffs, because it's like being a playoff game every single game for this team.
You know, on that note, Craig, being a GM, I always go to the long-term with a question, because and I know in your role with the Capitals, you're day-to-day, you're focused on the game that's coming up that night, the next night, the night after. But you also must sit there at times and say, okay, what are the long-term prospects for this team? How are they rebuilding? Because at the deadline, they became a seller, which I thought was really wise on Brian McClellan's part. He traded people like Mantha and Edmondson and Kuznetsov. He got back valuable assets to use for future. Where does the future lie? I don't mean, is it bright? Of course you're going to say it's bright, but like, what is the future of the Caps, and how does that mold with OV? Because we all know that OV's the guy that they want to see if he can break Gretzky's record and so on. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think you hit it on the head there, Neil, when you said there were shrewd moves at the deadline. When you look at what the Capitals have now in the cupboard, they have more draft picks, I think, the next 3 years than any other team. They have 25 picks in the next three drafts. Are they going to move some of them come July, or, you know, when the free agents come out? Maybe. I think they're caught in between here, but because of the way the team has played now, I think they're going to be buyers come UFA time. And I think when you look at it, we've got all these draft picks. Then I love talking college hockey, as you know, and you love college hockey too. We've got a special player in Ryan Leonard. He had 31 goals at Boston College this year, or 32. He's the number one freshman scorer in the history of that program, outdoing Brian Giotto, who had a tremendous college career. I think when you look at the final four, he is going to be a bright star. The question is, as a young player, is he ready to make it to the NHL? I think about 90% of the people think he's ready to step in. So now all of a sudden you have that youthful exuberance. To me, it plays well with Ovi. Ovi's only about 47 away from beating Gretzky. So now Ovi's going to put together a 25, 28, 30 goal season this year if he gets hot the remaining part of the schedule. Now he's on track with 2 years left in his contract to beat Gretzky, but he's going to be surprised. He's going to be surrounded, guys, by what they've been looking for is speed and youth. And what Brian McClellan has done, he says, look, I need a certain age group. That's what they're targeting. They want 25 or so. They don't want 30, 32-year-olds because they've already got all these young players ready to step up that I've already went over with you guys. That now we've got a good future ahead of us. Is it going to happen next year, guys? I don't know, but I'd love to see Ryan Leonard here next year. I think he's going to be a star. He's a top 10 pick last summer, and he's ready to play. He has an NHL grit. Now, a lot of scouts are saying the following about Ryan Leonard. He plays a lot like Tom Wilson. Well, that's a hard thing to follow, right? No one plays like Tom Wilson. Does he play gritty and grind it and do that? Yeah, but I'm not sure we can put him in that category yet. But he definitely gets some dirty goals, and 31 of them or 32 at the college level, as you guys know, pretty impressive. And he's going to go to the Final Four, the Frozen Four, and let's see what this young man can do.
Craig, we've covered a ton of ground with you on this show, but got to ask you one more thing. Want to end on somewhat of a fun note. So, you know, we all saw Alexander Ovechkin during the All-Star break riding camels in Abu Dhabi. And and you have covered his entire career from start to finish. Is there a particular fun story about him that our listeners would just love to be able to hear?
A fun story about Ovi. Wow. There's a lot of them. Obviously, the Stanley Cup celebrations blew me away. What he did, diving into the water, doing all those type of things. Ovi's interesting. The one thing that I've learned from Ovechkin, and this, a lot of fans, as you get older, and you guys know that, I was laughing with somebody the other day. I said, you know what? I didn't like to practice when I was older. I just thought it just wears on you the length of the season. You see Ovi every day, and I've seen him every day. Number one, there's a smile on his face. And every time I ask him, I said, Ovi, you want to go to practice? He says, yes, I want to practice. Even at his age now, he wants to be on the ice. Even if it's a short, quick skate, he gets the goal. He gets his body going. He feels great about it. But I think diving into the pond outside a restaurant in D.C. in the Stanley Cup playoffs when they won it was the highlight for me. Meeting him, and not meeting him, but seeing him at the Stanley Cup parade, the way the boys started the day, and midday he's in great form, and just the big hug and just the smile and just the way I think the fans endear this guy is my best story for Alex Ovechkin is how much he is beloved. And I told Neil the story before. We pull into town when he was, you know, probably the young guns here in Washington, which was Ovi, Salmon, Mike Green, Nick Backstrom. I actually thought I was going to a rock concert. The amount of people that would be outside our hotel. I said, we are the traveling Wilburys or something, because it was crazy. And still to this day, there is a wonderful love for Alex Ovechkin, not only in our town, but I see it around the league because of the way he plays, number one, because of how giving he is. And you guys don't see him every day. The things that he does for our area in Washington, the charitable things that he will never say no for, is sort of behind the scenes, but he's been an incredible ambassador. That's how what I'm going to say. Ovi is an incredible ambassador for our great game.
And that exuberance just seems, it has never left him from his rookie season until now. To a large degree, we still see the same type
of player. I do have one funny story, maybe. I do recall we were in Florida And I think he was down there for the first time. And I still think to this day, he came to practice. He was smarting a little bit. He got stung in the water right outside our hotel by, well, what's the floating
jellyfish.
I think he got bit by a jellyfish. So that's the one story that is in lore, is in history. So if the fans are listening, it might be the jellyfish story back when he was a young player.
Well, this has been great, Craig, and we so much appreciate you coming. You talk about Ovechkin's exuberance. Your exuberance at your age for what you do and for the Caps and for the National Hockey, you've never lost that.
Well, thank you.
You have never lost
that. I love the game,
Neil. From the very beginning.
I love the game, Neil. And you and I both love it. Vic, I know you love it. It's just something that every day I go to work, I get to watch the greatest game in the world. I get to work with a great guy in Joe B. Our whole crew is wonderful. They've treated me unbelievable since I played in Washington. I've been there now over 40 years. The fans, you've got to be excited. You know what? And we went through some lean years here in Washington. But the one thing I always said, got the greatest job in the world that every day is different. We're not sure what's happening coming up this week. We're not sure about a great play. We're not sure about a big hit or a big fight. But it's just the excitement of National League Hockey that drives me every single day. I am so excited, whether it's a day off before or it's the day of the game. I just can't get enough of the National Hockey League.
Well, Craig, that comes through on every broadcast I've ever seen you do. That excitement for it. And that's whether the Caps are winning or losing. You're still got that excitement. And thank you very much, because you've brought that excitement onto this podcast. And we thank you so much for doing that, taking the time to do it. Say hi to Joey B for me. He's a great guy. I got to get him on at some point. We got to get Joe B on, because his wordsmith stuff, I mean, he has more words. He comes out with words I've never heard of before.
I didn't think every night. I said, I go home and I ask my wife, what was that word Joe used? What's it mean? And I'm just like excited, because he comes up with phrases and he makes sure he never uses the same phrase. And I'm like, how do you do that? And then, of course, we're the odd couple. He'll go for wine. I'm, of course, probably this week going for wings and beer. And that's what's different between us two.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Craig, and good luck the rest of the way to you and to the Caps down the stretch here.
Thank you. I love your guys' show. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Time now for a quick shout out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by MyGray, your source for game worn jerseys. Head to MyGray.com to get your collection started today. Get real. Get it from MyGray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at MyGray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code, WRAP10.
Vic, I got to tell you, Craig Lachlan, of the guests we've had, and we've had some really good guests, but Craig Lachlan was fantastic. I mean, his enthusiasm about the Caps, I mean, to do this podcast, it's infectious. I just think he was a great, great guest for us.
I felt the same way. He was so excited. And you know that there were so many more stories that he could have told if we had the time.
And you're excited about your story that you're going to tell.
Well, I'm not sure how excited I am as much as I think it needs to be put out there, though. So 3 weeks ago on this very show, we addressed John Hines pulling Marc-Andre Fleury in a March 10th game against Nashville in the overtime, where they were risk losing the point that they had gained in order to try to score the goal. And they scored, and the hockey world was abuzz because it was a bold move. It was fabulous. I mean, both TNT and ESPN just lauded this coaching move. But from where I sit, it was high risk, marginal reward, and greater loss, and completely not necessary. And sure enough, on Saturday afternoon, Hines rolled the dice again, and it came up snake eyes.
Yeah, and the problem with this, from my vantage point, is that he did it once and got away with it. You should take your chips and go home. But he pushed them into the middle again. And now when he gets scored into the empty net, they lose that one extra point that they got when it was successful a couple of weeks earlier. So, you know, you still had the rest of the overtime. You still had a shootout to try to get that second point. And instead, you got none. So you got none instead of two. And it also made the first time you did it be now worthless.
Exactly. And let's just put a little bit of perspective on where the Wild were in the standings. So entering play on March 10th, they were 8 points out of the second Wild card, and they were playing in game 65. Saturday, they were 8 points out of the second Wild card, and they were playing game 73. So while they were not really close to being mathematically eliminated, Hines still rolled the dice a second time on this. And I think, you know, the reason that people got so excited about this is because there aren't a lot of instances where it is exactly necessary to happen. So we did a little bit of research, and turns out that since the NHL went back to overtime in 1983, there have only been five times that there had been a result as a result of a coach pulling a goalie in overtime. Two were by Hines over a 20-day span. There was a game in 2017 where the Kings pulled Jonathan Quick with 0.9 seconds on the clock, and Tyler Toffoli managed to score before the buzzer. But that was an instance where there was no way the Kings were going to get scored on. But the other two instances is really where you would pull a goalie. And that is when you have to win to avoid being eliminated. So the first time came in the year 2000, and Vancouver was trailing Edmonton and needed to win, not tie. And they wound up getting scored on into the empty net by the Oilers, who they were playing that night. And then 3 years later, the Kings were 14 points back with seven games to play. They were in Columbus. They were playing in overtime. And the only way that they were going to be able to salvage their season was by winning, not tying. And they got scored into their empty net. So the bottom line is this, Neil, is the only reason to ever pull your goalie in overtime is if you need the regulation or win tiebreaker to keep your season alive and to avoid elimination.
What you're saying is absolute desperation. Go ahead and do it. But other than that, you've got other ways to get those points.
There's no question. I mean, and you and I talked about this. We try to turn the prism in different ways. And I can't think of really another reason that you would do that, except if you're on the verge of having your season come to an end. This is the Human Side of the Story, brought to you by UBS Financial Services Incorporated. On March 24th, Zach Hyman of the Edmonton Oilers scored his 50th goal of the season and also became the first Jewish player to score 50 goals in the season. Now, the story took a little bit of an odd twist when an independent podcaster named Andrew Berkshire went on Twitter and did somewhat of a rant trying to lessen Hyman's accomplishment by saying that his success had much to do with growing up in really a youth of privilege, up to and including playing with Connor McDavid and before that, Austin Matthews. So he had a pretty good run of success with the players that he played with, but also had a life of privilege. At the same time, he also praised Hyman for scoring consistently from areas that many players don't want to go to. So he's kind of trying to hedge his bet there, but it didn't go well with social media. So there was some backlash, and Berkshire went on again with a second tweet attempting to clarify that he wasn't going after Hyman as much as it was on the media for not telling the story of Hyman having having a privileged upbringing. I'm going to throw it to you, Neil.
There's a lot of players. I've been in this league for 40 years, and there's a lot of players that are, have a privileged background. And there's a lot more that have a privileged background that couldn't make it. So having a quote-unquote privileged background, which I think means in a rich parents, has nothing to do with whether or not you make the National Hockey League. You make the National Hockey League on character, you make it on work ethic, and you make it on talent. And if you've got those things, you can end up making the National Hockey League. I've known people that have bought junior teams to try to get their son to be a good player. I've known people that have hired full-time coaches. It didn't get their kid into the National Hockey League. You don't get into the National Hockey League unless you have those three things I just said, character, talent, and tremendous work ethic. We've got players, Vic, in the National Hockey League now that are from Vegas. We've got players that are from Hilton Head, born in Hilton Head, South Carolina. We've got Austin Matthews, who was from Scottsdale, Arizona. And if you know Scottsdale, Arizona, that's a beautiful, beautiful upper-class place to live. Nobody's turning around and saying that the reason why they're doing so well is because their privileged background. I have a sneaking suspicion, and I'm not going to say it, but I think there was an ultra motive behind this, and it's distasteful to me.
It is. And let's face it, you know how many players have scored 50 goals? How many different players have scored 50 goals in the NHL?
I do.
Right. Okay.
100.
It's exactly 100. And every single one of those players has taken a different path to the NHL. They've been privileged through their talent, maybe through the fortunate of having well-to-do parents. But every story has one thing in common, that in order to get to the National Hockey League, you have to work hard and you have to produce. And in order to stay in the National Hockey League, it's the same formula. You have to keep working hard and you have to keep producing. And Zach Hyman is certainly one of the examples of that.
He certainly is. And the way he plays the game, he plays it on hard work. But that's it for us for today, Vic. And I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsors, to MyGray, UBS, Doer Jeans, and Ninsult Financial Partners. Thanks to the listeners, of course. That's the most important part. Send questions or comments to nhlwraparound@gmail.com. Join us next Tuesday for more NHL discussion when we talk about my old team, the New York Rangers, and our neighbors to the north seeking their first Stanley Cup title in 31 years. Looking forward to seeing you then.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.